A Podshape production.
Episode 5, Dylan Disappears. This is the story of Robert and Dylan Dickey. Both went missing in 2016, 9 days apart. Their disappearances are unrelated, apart from the fact that they are both the dad and son of Damien Dickey. In the last episode, there was a breakthrough in the case of Damien's dad, Robert. Head back to episode 4 to hear how it unfolded. Needless to say, his case is not now a missing person, but something more sinister. Dylan's case is totally different, and we pick up where we left off in episode 3. A reminder, there's some graphic detail in Damien's account of Dylan's final days before he went missing.
Like, he'd done stuff the week before in front of me, and I took him to mental health at Maitland to the hospital, and I don't know why, but they let him out on the next day. I think he tried to kill himself at work. No, no, I don't think he did. He got the Stanley knife and fully put it there and freaking put it right up like that, like a few times. And one of my mates, he was working with us as well at that day, and, you know, he's a big, tough man too, you know, and it shocked us. Like, we just couldn't believe, yeah, what we seen, eh? It was terrible. Yeah, I thought he was going to die then, to be honest. I did. I thought he was going to die then.
Damien is sure that Dylan had been using ice in the weeks and months before his disappearance.
It's that ice, mate, because I didn't know he was, like, coming down off it and stuff, because I was, towards the end, I was knowing he was on it, and he kept saying he wasn't, which I think he was still having a little bit or whatever, but because I was constantly onto him, he didn't, like, have as much freedom or chance to do it. And so I think, like, I don't know, I think he might have been coming down off it. That's why he was just getting really frustrated at work, and just, I could tell it wasn't him, you know. And he tried to attack me that day as well, before he'd done that, with his big rock, and it was just crazy. And he ended up stripping all his clothes off. This was in a built, like, the whole street was virtually under construction, and he stripped his clothes off and ran down the street saying, I was born naked, I'm going to die naked. And I was just like, oh, fuck. I was freaking out. My mate was trying to, you know, he was worried what we just seen, you know. And then he was like, fuck, we gotta get him to, you know, the mental health place. At the start, I wasn't blaming them, but I'm thinking, well, if they had kept him in there, and because, like, say, what if, like, you know, you start thinking, oh, maybe if he was still in there, he wouldn't have done this. But I think he had his mindset he was gonna do it, you know. And I actually rang my mum. And she lives at Kalala Bay, which that's a 4 or 5 hour drive to come. And I just said, you know, maybe you can come and talk to Dylan. And because it was sort of, because after he got out of the mental health place, that's he went and stayed with Nicole. Because I was like, this is just, you know, it's out of control. And I think Nicole picked him up from the mental health place, so she just took him home with him. And I was like, well, you know, but then she started finding, I don't know if it was that week or whatever it might have been, she was finding bloody syringes under the lounge. She's got two daughters there. She was finding needles, and he was, like, freaking out at night and thinking he was seeing people next door, and they're all out the window, like, where? And he was just messing with that. Like, you know, he wasn't in a good frame of mind, mate, you know. He was that shit, just, yeah. And I think he might have, maybe there was a day or something, but he just wasn't right. I knew, you know.
There was a text from Dylan you told me when we talked on the phone the first time.
Yeah.
What did that text say?
Pretty much spoke a little bit about me dad.
Do you still have it?
Just want to let you know before I go that even though we had our differences and we didn't see eye to eye, I will always love you. There aren't enough words or enough ways to word this to make you understand fully just what you mean to me, and no matter what, I will always watch over you and the family. Sorry it has to be like this. I know you have a lot on your plate right now, but prepare for the worst, because tomorrow is not going to end well. I just don't want to have to wish I sent this to you when I'm gone, so I'm saying goodbye while I can. I love and miss you, and wish I could give you one last hug. I'll let you know somehow I'm still around.
The night before, he sent me that message. So I went straight around to his mum's and I said, and I was like, Dylan, don't do anything stupid. You know, we'll sort everything out, everything will be okay. And I regret saying it because I said to him, I said, no matter what you do, do not do anything here, because if your sisters find you, it's going to be fucking chaos, mate, you know. And that's why I think he went out where he did, mate, you know. He thought, oh, well. And I sort of regret it because I think, shit, maybe if they had have found him, we could get that closure. Oh, he was out the back shed. You know, sad, it'd still be bloody terrible, but they would know, oh, he died in the, you know, people didn't kill him, he done it himself. But I think he's had a decency, because he was ashamed to be on that shit how he was. He was ashamed of that. He knew it was the wrong thing, but he got, you know, trapped into it or whatever. He's just, you know, they get addicted or whatever that he's done. And, yeah, so I think he thought, well, I'll go out here and then no one will have to find me. You know, I can do my thing. And he obviously wasn't thinking, oh, they're going to go around not knowing where I am. That's the least of his sort of thought. But I think he had the decency just to say, well, I'll go out here. It's out the bush, it's back with nature. You know, that's what he likes. He was always about nature. And
so how was he that night before you were talking to him?
He was upset. Not hysterical, but he was upset. Like, I didn't think he was going to do what he'd done. I wouldn't have left him, you know what I mean? But, and I remember saying, because at the time, I must have had to meet the police at my dad's again. Because even that, I said, Dil, look, I've got to get up early. Because this was, say, about 11 o'clock when I spoke to Dylan. I said, look, I've got to get up early and go to dad's in the morning. So just, like, you know, hang in there. When I get back, I'll come and see you. Like, everything will be fine. Just don't do anything here, mate. And I said that was the last time I ever seen him.
There was 1 week between Dylan being discharged from the mental health unit, moving back to live with his mum, and then disappearing forever. 23rd of June, 2016. Dylan Dickey disappears.
Pretty much one of my mates, or an old mate, contacted me and said that Dylan's motorbike had been found out the bush, and he said, I'll come pick you up and we'll meet you, like, we'll take you out there. And apparently, I didn't know, but the police were already out there. They'd set up a command centre thing, and so we headed out the bush, sort of probably 15, 20 minutes from Cessnock, heading out to the Kyabram State Forest. When we got there, there was a few coppers there, and I spoke to them. I was pretty upset, because I sort of knew it wasn't going to be good. And we just spoke to the police. They'd sort of said, you know, there's going to be more police coming out, SES and everything, to help search. And they spoke to me. They asked me what I thought, and I told them I thought that maybe Dylan had done it himself. Same, I showed him the message on my phone. And they pretty much just said, well, there's not really, you know, they said, there's not much you can sort of do here. You might as well, like, go home or whatever.
So the search area, his motorbike was there?
Yep. Yep, they found his bike, or other people from the public found his bike, sort of bit off a track, off the main road, or not main road, but the main track.
Was it hidden, or was it?
No.
No.
Just out in the open.
Stood up or laying down?
Yeah, stood up.
Stood up.
Yep, just standing there on its stand. And then maybe
his helmet, those sorts of things?
That there was just, at this, there was just his bike was there. That's what they were, just his bike was there, so they concentrate on that area sort of thing. And then SES and, you know, the fire brigade or whoever, there was different search things come up. And then they found his helmet as well, but his helmet and gloves, they were found probably maybe 500 metres or so from his bike, sort of heading down the mountain sort of thing towards the cliffs and real rocky area and stuff like that. They found his helmet and gloves just sitting on a rock just by itself.
So like they'd been placed there, not yeah. like they'd been discarded?
No, they'd been definitely just sat there or sitting uh-huh. upright.
Someone had rested them there.
Yeah. And then probably another 500 metres away they found his Italio papers because he used to roll his own cigarettes. That was sort of found at the bottom of a pretty steep, like, cliff face sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You could walk down to it, but I thought that too. When I seen them, I'd realised how good they had searched for him, like to find a little thing this big in, you know, thousands and thousands of acres. They found them out, because they took me down to show me where they'd found his stuff.
Who called Nicole?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I don't really know. As I said, after all that stuff happened, my memory and stuff, even, it's just... I wasn't real good. I just couldn't believe what was happening.
Did you see anyone? Did you try and get some help yourself?
I did it after a while because my mum, everyone was worried. Which of course, they're going to be, but they were worried, thought I was going to do something stupid as well, and which I got no intentions of ever doing anything like that, like I never would. And I did see, a couple of psychologists or whatever, psychiatrists or probably both, whatever they are, and like they said, I wasn't really, like they said, I was, well, they were all amazed, really, because they said, well, you're pretty good, really. They said, what you've been through and what's going on, you're not really depressed. Like, people wanted me to get on depression tablets and all this sort of thing, and I used to argue, because I said, I'm not depressed. Like, I'm upset because of what's happened. Of course, I lost my father and my son. I'm angry, I'm upset, but I'm not sitting at home in the dark, trying to cut my wrists or something. I'm getting on with life. Like, I think that kept me going. It was working. I was going to work every day still, hopping on my motorbike and going for a ride, and just trying to keep my brain busy instead of trying to think of what if or the, mostly I'm fine, like every now and then maybe a certain song or, I'll think some, certain thing or, but pretty much I am, I'm, for what I've been through, I'm going heaps good, I think anyway, yeah.
As you hear Damien's story unfolding, it makes you ask a few questions. If Dylan did take his own life, where was the body? Why has it never been found? He'd already warned his dad the night before that the next day wasn't going to end well. Surely Dylan would want to be found. In the next episode of My Dad and Son Are Missing.
Even the police about my dad's, they even asked me if I killed my dad, and thought, because it was such a bizarre, and even people on social media have said it on sites, and anyone that knows me knows that's, I'd never ever do anything like that. But when the police asked me, that was sort of the hard thing, it's bad enough time I'm going through, and then to be asked that, it's like, he's fucking for real, it's like an insult, a big insult.
There are over 38,000 long-term missing person cases in Australia, and the story you've just heard is one of them. We want to continue to help bring these emotional stories of ambiguous loss to you so we can spread the word and hopefully get some closure for the families. For as little as the price of a coffee a month, you can help support us to keep creating this content. Just head to our Patreon page. The link is in the show notes.